What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
What's up, guys? Red Nation Hoops Podcast. My name is Solomon Ali, at Red Nation Hoops on Twitter. Here joined by the newest addition to RedNationHoops.com, Mr. Forrest Walker, at DoNots on Twitter. Good to have you on, Forrest. How you doing?
Hey, it's good to be here.
Also joined by the infamous Taylor Pate, at Taylor L. Pate on Twitter. How you doing, Taylor?
Hey, I'm doing great.
So before we get started, we have some announcements. The Red Nation Hoops podcast is now going to be a part of the Almighty Bond podcast network. So what's going to change? Not much, honestly. It's still the same show. It's still the same people, same website, rednationhoops.com. If anything, the podcast is going to get better. We're going to have access to more unique guests from around the NBA, and this podcast will now have advertising. So it's basically similar to like the Locked On podcast network, because I know a lot of you guys listen to Locked On Rockets, which is also a very good podcast. It's going to be similar to that. There's going to be a podcast for every NBA team, and we're going to be the Rockets affiliate for Almighty Ballin'. So I guess the best place to start for this podcast is we have action on the Demo situation. Like, Demo got a contract from the Nets, 4 years, $34 million. And honestly, like, for me, like, as soon as I saw this, like, I was like, of course they did. Because the Nets made so much sense for Demo. Like, it was like a no-lose situation for the Nets, because the Nets are in a situation where they have to make these type of risks, right? And this is kind of one of those teams we thought Demo would get an offer from, them or the Miami Heat, because the Nets don't have their picks, and they need to get better some way, form, or fashion, and nobody wants to go to Brooklyn right now. So the best way to do that is to gamble on restricted free agents. And so they took a shot at, I think, Allen Crabbe. They took a stab at a bunch of restricted free agents, and I think they got better over the offseason. Kenny Atkins seems to be the new Brad Stevens of the NBA. And I just think this is a really smart move for Denver, Brooklyn, because I thought they would make this offer in the summer, and they did it right after the deadline where Demo can't be traded by the Rockets if he signs with them. So the Rockets are now less likely to sign him because of that reason. So, initial reaction to this contract, guys.
It's a complicated contract. The details that have come out of it are extremely weird. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I read through David Wiener's breakdown of what he expects the contract to be. And man, there's just so many loopholes in this thing. It seems like the base salary is actually going to be a little bit lower than we expected. And there's supposed to be like $6 million in incentives. And it's like, I think the base salary is 31, and after the $6 million in incentives, it's 4 years, 37, but, $2 million of that is unlikely incentives. I feel like, especially with the way that our power forward and center rotation is right now, Demo coming in, he may not be able to reach some of those even likely ones. It actually could hurt the Rockets less than we even thought it might to match.
Yeah, and the biggest situation for the Rockets right now is I think they're 24th in the league in payroll, and that's because every team in their went out of their mind this offseason and just spent all their money. And so the Rockets, they were kind of shrewd, but not really, in spending their contracts this summer in the way that they didn't use all their payroll. So they're $10 million under, they can still spend $10 million basically. And so if they match this contract, they're going to be right up there next to the, basically where they can't spend any more money. And so the tricky thing for the Rockets going forward is they can't trade Demo this summer without his consent, and they can't cut him because that contract is guaranteed. So the real thing is, like, do you think the Rockets are going to get free agents this summer? Because that's the kind of the decision making that Morey has to make. Like, do you think you can get a commitment from a max guy this summer? Because if you do, you don't max his contract. And if you don't think you, if you think this summer is kind of a lost cause, then why not match this contract? But then again, like, the Rockets are in a situation where they, with James Harden, where they only signed a 2-year extension. So, I mean, like, the this was a 3-year extension, but that third year is non-guaranteed and Harden's likely to opt out of it. So getting stars around Harden is going to be a priority for the Rockets. And we know Morey, he's big on flexibility. So, but the thing with this contract is the second 2 years are non-guaranteed. But again, the big thing holding the Rockets back is it's front-loaded. So there's going to be more money spent on the front end of this contract. I think this is kind of a really smart way to structure this contract for the Nets, because, like, they covered their ass in making sure the last 2 years are non-guaranteed. And it makes it even, they know very well what kind of situation the Rockets are in. And they made it much more difficult for Morey to match, and the Rockets can't trade him because he has a pseudo no trade clause this summer, because they missed the deadline to sign him. And so I think leverage is back in Demo's camp because of the way this contract is structured. Would you guys agree with that?
I think the leverage to get to the Nets is on in his side, I guess, if he wants to be there. I actually think they'll probably match it for what it's worth. It's because it's a pretty value. It's not super high. It's 2 years. And the thing that people have not talked about that I think is very likely is that you sign Modiunas, and you have him as an option of power forward, and then you can move some of the other guys who have shown a lot of promise for assets. Like, keeping him and then moving someone else is the way to maximize total amount of assets. And if there's anything Daryl Morey does, it's try to maximize total number of assets.
Yeah, and I think they can even stretch the second year if they did, for whatever reason, decide to, you know, to part ways. They could get that down to maybe $2 or $3 million a year, if they absolutely had to. After seeing that $6 million of it is in incentives, that I initially didn't think they would match. But I think that, you know, with that much of the contract being incentives, you know, it certainly seems like they should match at this point, just based on value alone.
Yeah. And for me, like, I don't think there's any absolute right or wrong answer here, because it really depends on what the Rockets want. If they want flexibility, they don't match this contract. If they want Demo on the roster, and because that contract is very cap friendly under any normal circumstances, but the Rockets aren't in normal circumstances, obviously, then they would match that contract, because let's get this out of the way. The Rockets are a much better team with Demo on the floor. And I don't think there's a case to be made otherwise, because I think having Demo just gives you so many things to work with. He's a good post player. He's a very good passer. And he's a good 3-point shooter. And I think having him in Mike D'Antoni's offense, I think you can do so many things with him. The problem is, like, where are the minutes going to go, right? Who's Demo going to take minutes away from? And the initial thought that comes to mind is probably Nene, right? Because I think you guys would agree that Nene is probably the third big off the bench, and having Demo take away some of Nene's minutes is probably a benefit for the Rockets, because Nene's been so bad defensively this year. And I think that's probably where his minutes are going to go. Now, whether or not the Rockets can manage to sustain an injury, that's really where this Demo contract, where Demo can become a luxury. Because if Nene goes down, or if Capella goes down, the Rockets are in some big, like, they're in some deep if they go down. And so that's really where, Demo becomes not only a luxury, but a necessity. Now, I'm going to go ahead and ask you guys, would you match on that contract? And do you think the Rockets are going to match on that contract?
I say yes to both. It's not an onerous contract. And, you know, like you said, you can stretch it out. I think it's not hard to get out from underneath if you have to. And I think more importantly, it lets you actually sell high in some other players when there's a shot. And the more versatility you have, the better. I would do anything to probably Ghana.
Yeah, I initially thought that they wouldn't and shouldn't, because with the way that they've opened the season up, you know, they beat the Spurs in San Antonio, they beat the Warriors in Oakland. You know, they've been a fun team. They seem to have their swagger back. They look appealing to free agents. But you know, after, especially with Nene missing the past two games, it immediately makes me wonder, you know, how many times this year that something like that's going to happen. And you know, the injury concerns do worry me. Now, I think he's fine right now, but you know, having that depth and actually, I think that having Nene playing less minutes and coming in for, you know, giving more in less minutes, could certainly benefit the Rockets. So I do think that they should and will match. And like Forrest said, you know, if you're going to be upgrading, at some point with another star, then more than likely it's going to be one of those positions that you can trade, such as a, you know, Corey Brewer, Trevor Ariza, Patrick Beverley. So yeah, I think they should and will match.
Yeah, and so I've been asked about this on Twitter a whole bunch of times, and my answer is, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if I would or not. And if you were to ask me, gun to the head, like, would you match on this contract, I'd probably say no, because let's just say theoretically they get a commitment from, let's say, Gordon Hayward, because I know he's a free agent this summer. If you get a commitment from Gordon Hayward this summer and you need to clear cap space immediately, who are you going to clear, right? Who are you going to trade? And you can't trade Demo because, again, he has that no trade clause. He has to be asked ahead of time where he's going to be traded and if he wants to be traded. So that's a hurdle you have to jump over. And again, that Corey Brewer contract is still on the books. That awful, awful Corey Brewer contract. And that's just a contract that teams aren't going to be willing to take on. And so you get into this situation where you have a free agent that wants to come to you, but you have no space. And that makes you a really, really, it puts you in a really, like, precarious situation going forward, because you don't want to become the Blazers, right? You don't want to become one of these teams with one of the highest payrolls in the NBA and probably only one superstar, right? You want to have, flexibility to add more than one, and you don't want to just commit a lot of money to all these role players. I don't know. And if you asked me straight up, I would probably lean more towards they shouldn't match. And I'd probably, and again, that's not to say the Rockets aren't a better team with Demo. I do think the Rockets are probably much better with Demo on the floor. But I just think, man, that flexibility and knowing the way Morey operates, like, we've seen this. Like, we saw this with Chandler Parsons. We've seen this with other restricted free agents in the past with the Rockets. The Rockets just don't like giving up flexibility. And so I think that's going to be something to pay attention to going forward. The Rockets won 3 out of their last 4 games this week, and they ended their long 5-game road trip in successful fashion. The team has yet to lose 2 games in a row this season, which I think is really, really encouraging moving forward, because this team responds well to losses. Like this team gets right back up. Like, that's different from last year's Rockets team in that when they lost a game, it just seemed like they'd go into this death spiral.
They didn't respond well to losses or to wins last year.
Yeah, they were just, like, terrible. Like, the culture was so bad with this team last year, and I don't think you can really deny that. Like, once they lost a game, they'd go into this tailspin where they'd lose, like, 3 or 4 more in a row. And this year, they have yet to lose 2 in a row again, like I said. And I just think the Rockets are, like, surprisingly really good this season, and I much better than what I thought they'd be. I thought they'd be a 45 to 51 team, and I actually talked to you about this earlier this year, Forrest. You actually were much higher on the Rockets than me. You thought 50 wins was like a baseline. Like, you thought they were guaranteed to win 50 games. Are they right around where you thought they'd be this season? Because we're at that 20 game mark. The 20 game mark is where I like demarcate what a small sample size is anymore, because I don't think you can call this a small sample size anymore. We're a quarter of the way into the season. So is this kind of where you guys expected them to be at this season?
This is literally about exactly where I expected them to be, actually. As long as health holds up. I mean, health has held up so far for the most part, and so they're pretty much right on target. I actually I have a spreadsheet where I'm keeping track of expected wins and losses and stuff because I'm a colossal nerd. But I thought they were gonna beat the spreadsheet by about like a game or two by now, and that's pretty much right where they're at. So I think this is a 50-win team, barring health issues, and I'm very happy so far that they look like that.
Yeah, and that's what I've said all along. Is I mean, given health, that was my prediction before the season started. You know, was given health, they can win 50 or more games, and you know, it's really crazy because if you really look at some of their losses, like the first game against the Lakers hit 12 out of 15 shots where a defender was within 2 feet of them. That's ridiculous. And then the Cavs game, the Cavs went nuts and just hit everything, even contested shots. And then the Jazz the other day, you know, they hit seemingly every shot they took. So the Rockets could even be in better standings right now had some of those hot shooting nights not happened. And of course you can chalk some of that up to the Rockets defense, but some of those shots were very, very well contested. So the Rockets are, I want to say they're ahead of my expectation, but really this is kind of where I expected them to be. They have one of the most elite offenses in the league right now. They're first in 3-point attempts. They're first in 3 points made. They're like fourth in three point percentage, second in 2-point percentage. I mean, they just hit shots.
Yeah, and I think the Rockets are kind of right where I thought they'd be offensively. Defensively, I thought they'd be a little bit better than this, I'll be honest. I thought they'd be like a middling defense, but right now they're 26th in the NBA in defense. So I think all of us are probably surprised by that fact. And this year is kind of a weird year for offense because the offenses in the NBA are so exceedingly high that the Rockets are fourth in the NBA. No, they're third in the NBA in offenses. And normally, their offensive rating, that's good for first in the league for like the last 4 or 5 years. Like the offenses in the NBA today are just so damn good that the Rockets are actually like third, and they should be first in any normal year. It's just this year the Warriors and Raptors decided just to be really, really good, and so the Rockets have that hurdle to go over. Now, as far as what I expected them going into the season, I thought they'd be around a 50. When I was asked to make a prediction, I said a bit flat 50, right? Because if you look at the offenses in the last 10 years, every top five offense has managed to win 50 games. And that's a stat that I've kind of railed on all of offseason. And so I think they're probably going to, I think they're primed to hit a little bit of a rough stretch somewhere in the near future. I don't think they're going to win like 54 games. Like what they're on track to win right now, they're on track to win like 53. And I think they're probably going to win around like 50 to 52. And so I think they're going to hit a little bit of a rough stretch here. They do have a long stretch of home games here. My biggest surprise for the Rockets is this last stretch of two games against the Warriors and Nuggets, because I just didn't think they'd win any of those games. Like, against the Warriors, obviously, the Warriors are the best team in the NBA, and it's not even close. And I didn't think that the Rockets stood a chance. And yet, they managed to outscore the hell out of the Warriors and stay in the match for two overtime games. What were your biggest takeaways from that game?
They're mad as hell on trying to prove things to people this year. Just what I was hoping for in the offseason, that they would come out just royally pissed at everybody. Everyone denigrating them all offseason, all last season. Like, they clearly wanted to make a statement in that Warriors game. They came out swinging in the highest order, and they popped the Warriors right in the mouth. And by the way, the Warriors did not look very happy about that, because that's a real rivalry, and both those teams really hate each other. And for the first time in like 3 years, the Rockets actually came out ahead and were able to make a statement to the Warriors. So this is a huge confidence boost. Like, I think they were waiting for this game. I think they had this one stuck on the calendar for a while, and they've been looking forward to it. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if the Jazz game, their performance was to some degree because they were looking past it. But I don't know, not to get too juiced up on the Rockets hype, but I think they're an even more dangerous team now. Like, they needed to prove to themselves and everyone else that they can actually take out top teams, and they've looked killer. Like, in the last two games, like in that Denver game, they came out angry. They came out murderous. It was damn impressive.
I think my biggest takeaway so far is Sam Dekker over, you know, from those two games. So in those two games, he is playing 27 minutes a game, which he's at 18 on the season. So playing, you know, significantly more minutes. And he's averaging here. He averaged 14 points, 1.5 steals, 6 rebounds, on 50% shooting. And he was able to not stop KD, but certainly, you know, in that fourth quarter and overtime, he made him work a lot. And, obviously Kevin Durant went, 1 of 7, in overtime. So, you know, Sam Dekker has been, a big, big revelation for me. And what's great about him is that he can play 3 or 4. And he does both well.
He really is like Ricky Parsons. Remember, yeah, Ricky Parsons exactly. Looked like a super defensive master, and then we know how that went. So hopefully Dekker follows a different path where he keeps defending.
Right, and I think that he's actually more geared towards being like that because he's not a playmaker. He's not a creator for other guys. He's only averaging, you know, like an assist a game. And I think that lends more towards him being kind of having a different role. He's not going to be expected to initiate offense and stuff like that. He's a catch and shoot guy, and he might, you know, give you some defense. And he's actually shown some stones when it comes to getting down on the block. And I remember a couple of spin moves right at the goal and dunking on people. And I mean, just this is basically his rookie season, and he looks to be like a seasoned vet.
Yeah, and you talk about coming out angry. I mean, this guy missed an entire season, and a lot of people, a lot of Rockets fans just didn't care about him anymore, right? Because it's like the new toy, right? You get a new toy like KJ McDaniels, and you kind of forget about somebody you drafted, right? Or like Clint Capella. Like, everybody forgot about like Sam Dekker, and nobody really knew what to expect from him because he hadn't played an NBA game, right? Like a full NBA game without having injury concerns, right? And so he's healthy this year, and I'm about to insert some train effects here because everybody's hopping aboard the Sam Dekker bandwagon right now, and this is something I've been railing on all offseason. I just think he's a good NBA player, man. I think he has a spot in this rotation. I think he's going to do well, and I think. If you talk about the Rockets moving forward, this is a subject we talked about on the last podcast with Chris Axman. I think Sam Dekker has a good chance to be a starting caliber player in this league. And I'm not exaggerating when I say that. He's just been that damn good. Like he's really smart. He understands angles. Like he knows where to be on the court at all times. And he's a good finisher, which is pretty surprising. And for his length, he's a good defender because if you lose a step on him, like if he loses a step on defense, his length makes up for so much on the defensive end. And I think going forward, that's a huge contract for the Rockets to add. Like he's so cheap for the Rockets. And if the Rockets were to part ways with, let's just say a Trevor Ariza, like if they wanted to make a trade for trade away Trevor Ariza to like a contender to clear cap space, like you can slot in Sam Dekker right there at that starting small forward position, or hell, even at the starting power forward position, if you wanted to stretch Ryan Anderson, right? Like he's that damn good and he's so damn versatile. And again, like the way the Rockets have been able to, I think I have to start commending the Rockets on the way they find these guys late in the first round. Like, are you okay?
Something fell over. It's okay. I'm all right. I'll live.
Yeah. So, I mean, we have to start like commending the way the Rockets find these guys in the late first round and like early second. Like the Rockets have a history now with these guys, like Clint Capella, Sam Dekker, Chandler Parsons. Harrell's looking pretty good, like Montrezl Harrell. Like I think in the Golden State game, he looked really, really good. And I think that's something we have to commend Rio Grande Valley, man. Those guys are doing a damn good job in the D League system for the Rockets. And here I'm gonna go ahead and read some losses for the Rockets this season. They've lost to obviously the Lakers. They've lost to the Cavs. They lost to the Hawks. They've lost to the Spurs. They've lost to the Oklahoma City Thunder. They've lost to the Raptors. They've lost to the Jazz. These are all perennial playoff teams. Like, and these are all, like right now, as of this moment, if you were to end the season right now, these guys will all be in the playoffs. They haven't lost to a team that's been bad, right? They've lost to real, like, legit teams. And that's something, like, the Rockets, like, underestimated a lot of teams last year. Like, they would lose games to the Sixers, to the Magic, like, teams that are clearly beneath their tier. And they would just lose games, especially, like, late in games. They just didn't close games well last year. And this year, they're doing a little, much better job at that. I think they still need to get better at moving the ball, because I think in that Golden State game,
Yeah, they do.
The ball stuck a lot in Harden's hands, and like that was just it made for a really, really hard offense to watch, and they got bailed out by a lot of air goring threes. But if they can figure out a way to get more ball movement, and a lot of this is fatigue, right? Like, you can only play that style for three quarters and just and sustain that for so long, right? And so far, the Rockets are starting off quarters like the best in the NBA. They're the best in the NBA in first quarter offenses. So I think they can sustain being kind of off in the fourth quarter for a little bit, but I think going forward, that's something they need to improve on. But yeah, there's a lot of positive signs for this team, and that's I didn't expect they'd be this good. I'll be honest with you, I didn't expect they'd be this good to start the season, especially considering the Beverly injury. Like, they withstanded the Beverly injury, and now with Beverly back, like, Beverly has like the highest plus minus in all their recent games, and he's just such a positive to the bench unit. Like, replacing Tyler Ennis with Patrick Beverly is like night and day.
It's not fair. No, it's not fair to be able to do that.
Yeah. And you could have, I mean, you could have conceivably come into this road trip and said the Rockets could finish 2-3 because, you know, you've got games at Utah, at Golden State, at Portland, and then the back to back with Denver. And they come out 4-1 and their wins, they've got a 13-point win, a 16-point win, an 18-point win on a back to back after playing Golden State. I mean, you know, they showed some serious stones in this road trip.
No, they've definitely been like they're definitely in a crucible. Their early schedule with all these road trips, 2 5-game road trips in the first 20 games, that's ridiculously brutal. Like, initially, we didn't know, for instance, that the Lakers were actually pretty good. So that loss didn't look very good. In retrospect, their whole season's actually been pretty impressive. I think they're still getting it together. They're still learning, and they're still gelling, which is kind of scary. I think, as it turns out, James Harden is better than anybody thought he was, and we've been really high on Harden.
I looked up a stat today, and the Rockets with Harden on the floor are the second best offense of all time. Like, when I say second best, like if not for this year's Warriors, they'd be the first best offense of all time. That's how damn good they've been. And without Harden, they're like 26th in the NBA this year in offense.
You think Harden's having a bad game, and all of a sudden he's got a triple-double and the Rockets are up 13. It's like, what in the world's going
on?
Yeah,
and he's, I think that's a good point you made there, because he's finding ways to be effective when he's not shooting the ball well, right? Like, the amount of passing he's doing, like, he's finding ways to, again, be a positive for this team when he's not shooting the ball well. And I think that's a huge thing that Harden just didn't have last year.
And it helps to have those shooters around him to actually make those shots when he makes a, you know, ridiculously great pass. And that's another reason that, going back to the cap situation, that I don't like the idea of trying to trade Ryan Anderson later if you need cap space. Unless it's maybe in that third year or fourth year of that contract, because he's just so valuable to this team.
I mean, sure. I mean, I'd say if you get an offer for like Willie Cauley-Stein from the Kings, for like Ryan Anderson, like could trick the Kings into taking some stupid offer, like you do that in a heartbeat. But again, like the I think you made a good point though with the shooting, because the Rockets are fourth in the league in 3-point shooting. They're like 38%. Like that's what they're averaging on the scene, like 37 to 38% from the 3-point line, and that's an above average shooter in the NBA. And they're doing that as a team, like which is pretty crazy. and like that starts with the additions they made this offseason and the improvements that like guys like Trevor Ariza shooting the ball well this year, and that's something he didn't do last year. Like he's having a bounce back year, like on both ends of the floor. Like I see Trevor Ariza diving for loose balls now. And I didn't see him do that last year. And that's like, I'm really encouraged by the way this team is like going in terms of a culture standpoint. And if they can keep this up, like we're going to have like, I think this is going to be like a serious, like free agent destination for somebody this off season. Like if you can find a disgruntled superstar at the end of the year that just wants to change the scenery, I think the Rockets are going to be one of those teams that are going to be in the market for a serious overhaul.
Their culture is amazing right now, and I'm going to lay out something really weird. I think that this season, James Harden has become the basketball Werner Herzog, which is probably the weirdest sentence I've ever said, but I'm going to explain what I mean by that. At this point, I think that he's been so maligned and has, like, and doesn't care anymore that now he just seems to... Well, all right, so last season, he was like a desperate man trying to win despite everything going wrong. And it just was a horrible downward spiral. This year, he's out there, and he's just like, he's just creating things to create them. As you said, he finds a way to become useful. People have talked about his incredible court vision and his imagination out there. And it's true, he's some kind of bizarre basketball genius. He can see angles and possibilities that every other, you know, almost every other player cannot see out there. So it almost seems like he's just having an amazing time out there, seeing what kind of crazy offense he can build. So it's like he's Werner Herzog, just making a movie in a new genre just to see if he can do it. he doesn't. All he cares about is just trying to like build the best offense in history for some kind of strange like intellectual pursuit in his bizarre bearded head.
He's Donald Glover with his most recent album.
Yeah, it's just like a real it's an expression of virtuosity for no other reason than its own purpose, which is magnificent to watch. I'm having an amazing time with this. It's otherworldly to see him do
Yeah,
this.
Like, Harden is, like, so fun to watch this year. Like, it's so, like, I know this is, like, kind of a stupid conversation, but, like Harden last year was really, really just, like, impossible to watch because he'd slow the ball down. He'd go for an isolation, which was probably the Rockets' best option on offense. And now he calls for a high screen and roll, and there's endless shooters everywhere, and you have a downwards rolling Clint Capella, which you didn't have last year in Dwight Howard. Like, Clint Capella has just been so damn good, like, these past 10 games. Like, he's starting to be comfortable in his own skin. He wasn't that great in the Warriors, in that Warriors game, but in every other game since, like, he's been so damn good at just knowing his role and, like, rolling to the basket. And that's something you didn't have last year in Dwight Howard. And I think, like, having Harden just do this is just, like, again, like you said, he's just a basketball genius. Like, I didn't know how smart he was, like, on offense until this year. Like, I knew he was a very, very good offensive player. But I think there's a case to be made, like, he's having one of the best offensive seasons of all time. Like, that, and that's not an overstatement. Like, as I said, like, with the Rockets with Harden on the floor are one of the best offenses of all time. And that's incredible. And like, when he rests, the Rockets go down to 26th. And... Like he's finding way, like, when he's shooting well, like, late in games, he's fine. Like, you remember in the Warriors game where in the fourth quarter, it might have been overtime or double overtime, I can't remember, but there was a play where he got Steph Curry switched onto him, right? And so he managed to get past Steph Curry, and the double, and the help came, right? And he found a cutting Sam Decker open for a layup. I didn't even see that pass. Like, I didn't even see that pass develop.
Yeah. It looked like a turnover, yeah. But it wasn't.
Like, I didn't even see that pass develop. And like, normally I'm pretty good at finding when guys are open, and Harden just, like, he sees things like two or three plays before they develop. And we're starting to see, like, how brilliant this guy is. Like we were having a conversation at the beginning of the season, right? Like is Harden going to lean more to the Steve Nash side, or is he going to lean more towards the Carmelo Anthony side in terms of dealing with Mike D'Antoni? And I think it's a combination of both in terms of skill set, and he's probably leaning more towards, like, the Steve Nash side in terms of gelling well. Like, this is probably, like, the second best player Mike D'Antoni's ever coached, and I don't think that's an overstatement, like, in terms of, like getting along in his system. Like, that's insane. Like Mike D'Antoni's been coaching for, like, 15 years, and he's finally found somebody since Steve Nash to, like, get along well in his system. And I think it's just really, really fun to watch. And, like, go ahead.
They can make their masterpiece together. Yeah.
Like, this is, like, I remember having a conversation with Paul at Rocket Intellect on Twitter. We were on a podcast earlier this year, and we were talking about, like, whether or not this was the right hire for the Rockets. And I think all of Rockets Twitter, we all wanted a defensive guy, right? We all wanted Frank Vogel. We all wanted Dave Yeager. We all wanted Jeff Van Gundy, right? That's what we wanted this offseason. And I think getting Mike D'Antoni might have been, like, in terms of situations, is there a case to be made that Mike D'Antoni was the second best hire this offseason, like, in terms of coach hirings? Because aside from Tom Thibodeau, I can't find any situation that's working out better for a new coach this year other than Mike D'Antoni.
I think I think D'Antoni has a serious case for coach of the year, especially if the Rockets can manage to get that fourth seed. I mean, maybe even the third. If they can get the third, he's got to be the, you know, the front runner for coach of the year. But he's just got the entire team bought in. You know, everybody seems to be having fun. Everybody is buying in offensively. And it's like, you know, Capella last year totaled 2.4 win shares, offensive win shares, and he's already at half of that, you know, 20 games into the season. So it's like, you know, the whole team is just having a blast with this guy.
I'm going to put it out there that if the Rockets manage to get the third seed in the West, not only is D'Antoni the easy frontrunner for coach of the year, I think James Harden becomes a shoe-in for MVP. Like, their record, I think, is the number one thing that's going to determine whether or not James Harden, like, what his eligibility is for MVP. If they're the fourth seed with, like, 50-plus wins, he has a real shot at it. But if they make the three seed, if they beat one of the Clippers, Spurs, or Warriors in the regular season record, I think there's no question. I think the narrative is going to be too strong at that point.
Yeah, I mean, like, the biggest thing is, like, how many games are the Rockets going to win, right? Like how many games are they going to end up winning at the end of the season? And if they win around that 52-game mark, like we were speculating earlier in the podcast, I think there's a case to be made, right? And, like, again, it's going to be really tough for Harden because there's so many superstars having career years this year. Like, if you, like,
No kidding.
Like, if you look at Russ, like, I know I'm really hard on Russ, but, like, Russ has been so good for the Thunder this year. And that triple-double thing is really amazing. What he's doing in Oklahoma City. And guys like LeBron, LeBron's having a career high in assists this year, which is pretty insane because he's always been a really good passer and he's averaging like what, 8 or 9 assists per game this year. And, guys like Steph is still good this year. Like Steph is really, really good this year. And they have somebody on that team that's better than him, like this year, like in Kevin Durant. Like, and so, it's going to be really tough. Again, like Harden is battling narrative and he's battling history, right? Because there hasn't been an MVP in the past, like since the 1980s, that hasn't been a top three seed, right? I think the last one was like probably Oscar Robertson, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, it's been a long time since an MVP has not been a top three seed. So if he does get that top three seed, I think his case does improve. And even if he doesn't win MVP this year, if he's like top three in MVP rating, and superstars around the league start to take notice of how fun it is playing in this Rocket system, I think the Rockets still end up on the positive, right? Like if Harden improves his reputation from where he was last year, like if he makes first team all NBA, which I don't think is a question this year, but if he makes first team all NBA and like, compared to last year where he didn't even make an all NBA team, and he's probably like top three in MVP voting, and everybody notices how fun the Rockets are. Cause I mean, you hear from national reporters all the time, and you can just see in the Rockets' faces on the bench, like this team is really fun to play for. And you could tell, like if you look at Kyle Wiltshire on the bench, like that guy doesn't play a damn minute, and he's have.
I love
yeah,
Kyle.
He doesn't play a damn minute, and he doesn't give a damn. Like he does not care. He's just having so much.
He's the first guy throwing towels up and celebrating. And
he's making like $600,000 a year or whatever. He's doing great. He's having a great
time. Yeah, guys like that, like guys at the end of the bench that don't even play, they're having fun. Like you're seeing like people on the bench, like these crazy bench celebrations, and we didn't see that from the Rockets last year, right? The biggest encapsulation of the Rockets last year was that one Vine when Harden made that game winner against the Warriors, and you looked at Dwight Howard and he was just like forcefully clapping, like God damn, I got to cancel my vacation plans now, right? Like that was the Rockets last year, and this year you look at guys like they just love playing, and I think it's gonna bode out well for the Rockets going forward.
The reason that I think that it's, I think the three seed is probably unlikely, but the reason I think that the four seed is likely, and I would even consider them, you know, more of a favorite to get the four seed is because I don't think that Oklahoma City is going to continue winning these close games the way that they have been. The Grizzlies are now without Mike Conley. The Trailblazers are not nearly as good as anybody thought they were going to be. The Jazz are really great defensively, but can't score the ball.
Except once.
Yeah, except against us, of course. Everybody scores against us. So. and so I just think that the bottom half of the West really, you know, with the way the injuries have played out and things like that, I just think that it's a lot more shaky down there. And I feel like the Rockets, as long as they're healthy, can be, I mean, easily that number four seed and maybe even challenge the Clippers for the three.
That's, I mean, it's a big asterisk, but I think that's exactly right, that it's theirs to lose. People are really hot on the Jazz, but I mean, let's see them catch up. I mean, that's really where it comes down to. Like, until further notice, I think the Rockets are a better team than the Jazz. They're the only team that's going to compete with them, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I would agree. And this gets into a conversation I wanted to have with you, Forrest, because you mentioned earlier in the podcast you've been kind of tracking how much they'd succeed compared to relative to expectations, right? And so I wanted to ask you, do you think it's a good thing if they overachieve this year? Because if you remember in 2014-15, when the Rockets overachieved their point differential by like six games, like they were supposed to win 50 games last in like 2014-15, and they won 56. So do you think it's a good thing if they have a season like that again?
No. Overachieving is bad. Being better than expected is what you want to do. Like, for players to come out and be better, for the team to have a better point differential than expected, that's good. But massively overwinning your point differential is, in fact, a bad thing, as we've seen from what's happened to the Rockets a couple of years ago.
And the Blazers this year.
And now look at the Blazers, yeah. So, yeah, overachieving is actually kind of poisonous unless you can keep that forward momentum going. If they overachieve a bit, then they pick up a star, that's actually fine. But they have to be able to keep that forward momentum. Because once you're going forward, going backwards feels like losing. So,
is Evan Turner the worst contract in basketball right now?
Oh, man. I'm so glad that he's signed into that contract. I'm so glad it's in Portland, of all places. This is, like, every time I think about 0.9 seconds, I just think about Evan Turner and everything's okay.
And, like, there's a lot of bad contracts, like, in contention for the worst contract. Like, Joakim Noah. Joakim Noah has been so bad for the Knicks. Yeah, brutal. And so, like, I think the Rockets, like, compared to what they, how their players are performing, they actually signed pretty good contracts. Now, whether or not Ryan Anderson and guys like Eric Gordon are going to maintain that level of play for the full length of their contract, that's still to be determined. And I agree with you, Forrest. I think overachieving is a bad thing. Like, I think the Rockets, they should strive. I mean, they, as an organization, they should strive to win every game, obviously. But I think they should be content with winning 50 to 52 games, or probably even maybe even less than that. Like, if they win 48 to 49 games, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a pretty good indication of where you're at. And I think it's smart to have realistic expectations. Like, if the Rockets go out and they try to retain guys like they did in 2014-15 is the best example. Like, they retained Corey Brewer, and I don't think they should have maintained that contract. And, like, they tried to bring the band back together when they really should have tried to upgrade everything they could, right? And I think if the Rockets just win around that 45 to 50 game mark, and if they get to 52, I think that's acceptable. I think they're in a good position going forward to attract stars and also have a realistic expectation where they're at.
Yeah. I think that you hit the nail on the head. It's important to be really good and not necessarily to win a lot of games. Like, if you're not going to win a championship, which they're not, it would take some truly momentous. There'd have to be some kind of weird, crazy event no one saw coming happen in sports, which, as we know, doesn't ever happen. We're in a life outside of sports. But they just need to get good, right? And the win totals don't really matter. Them gelling, them learning their offense, which they're doing every single day, them figuring out a way to play defense, them, under my breath, figuring out which role players everyone loves are actually need to be flipped for something better. forward momentum is what matters here. Yeah. By the way, Sam Decker, love him while you can, because he ain't going to be on this team in about 3 years. He's going to be flipped for something real good.
Yeah. And, like, I think it's probably a good thing that they're overachieving a little bit for guys like Corey Brewer, right? Like, Corey Brewer is playing way above his head right now. Like, he's not this good. Like, he,
he's playing himself out of Houston. It's true.
Yeah. And, like, the day he gets traded at the deadline, oh my God, I'm going to be in absolute euphoria the day he gets traded. Like, my Twitter's going to blow up that day. I'm going to be so happy the day he gets traded because, like, that contract, oh my God.
I wish he was good. I like him and I wish he was good. That's all I have to say about that.
And that's exactly where I'm like, he's a really nice guy, Corey. You're not worth $32 million or whatever the hell you got paid this, in last year. But yeah, I think correctly assessing where you're at is a good thing. And I think, what was the last thing you mentioned for us?
Oh, getting better and learning which role players and stuff you can flip for something better so you can keep improving.
Yeah. And so I think that's probably a smart thing to do. Like guys like, as you mentioned, Sam Decker, like, we really like him right now. I don't know. God knows what team he's going to be on in 2 years. And, the same goes for guys like, you know, like Ryan Anderson. Like I know you're a big fan, Taylor, of Ryan Anderson, but dude, this guy's gonna be gone in 2 years.
I'm fine as long as it's not this year or next year. I'm fine because I think he's gonna be okay for the next, you know, this year and the rest of this year and next year. After that, he's probably, you know, certainly gonna be cap space.
Yeah. And I think that's probably the right thing to do for the Rockets. It's probably a shrewd move. I probably look at this a little bit too cold and calculated, like in terms of guys like Corey Brewer. Like, they're probably good for the culture, but man, they're just really bad players. And I think having really bad players getting overpaid on your team is just probably not a good thing not a good recipe for success going forward. And yeah, I think that's a pretty good stopping point for the podcast, actually. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and SoundCloud. By the way, for SoundCloud listeners, this month will be the last month you can listen to us on SoundCloud, because we're going to start expanding where you can listen to us. I think SoundCloud is probably going to go. If you can, subscribe to us on Google Play. If you're an Android listener, subscribe to us on Google Play Music, because I think that's probably the best thing to do to maintain our podcast going forward. We're going to still be uploading podcasts on SoundCloud for the next month, but after this month, it's done. We're going to cut the cord on SoundCloud and we're going to go straight to iTunes and Google Play. We're close to getting into Stitcher Radio, and I'll give you an update on that when that happens. So yeah, give us a good rating on iTunes. Give us a good rating on iTunes, because that helps people find the show and that helps us tremendously. And yeah, good night, guys.